So there's lots of resources that we can tap to solve a lot of the problems facing our economy. And, you know, bonds being one of them, Bitcoin bonds being one of them. What we can do with Bitcoin bonds, something that I've been lobbying Samson for, actually, why he came to Suriname, is to implement Bitcoin bonds, you know, get rid of most of our debt, similar to you know, what's being done here in El Salvador. Just imagine, just scrap SRD, change it to SAT. So it's not just me fighting against politicians in Suriname. You're fighting a battle against, you know, deep state government control. Government. It's the people that are pulling the strings behind governments, right? Mm-hmm. That have most of the control in the world. And it's not something that...
Bing bong. We are live here at the Adopting Bitcoin conference with potential future president, Maya Parabu, did I say that correctly?
Yeah.
There we go. While she's getting the Bitcoin supply formula tattooed on herself here live at the conference. But Maya, there's a lot of great things going on here in, you know, Bitcoin land and everything else, but you're potentially going to be the next president of Suriname. So what is your thought process when it comes to Bitcoin bonds and utilizing Bitcoin and potentially making Suriname the next nation state that adopts Bitcoin?
Well, okay, we're multitasking here, which seems to be one of my best skills. Bitcoin bonds, interesting topic or interesting subject to start on, honestly. So we've actually had a bond issued in the last couple of years, and this government wants to do a similar bond issuance. And it was historically one of the most stupid things that any government could ever do. The world was doing negative bond yields globally, and interest rates were very low. And we got hit with, I think it was a 13% interest rate on average. On that bond, they just restructured it. It's still very high. So it's not one of the best financial moves or instruments that this government has actually done. And right now, they've actually, to pay off that bond, they have placed an option on our royalties. So part of the funds from our royalties will be going towards bond payments. So in essence, it's a very just corrupt structure, and the whole thing is basically government manipulation, almost. Interesting feeling. Yeah, government manipulation, and basically a handful of people benefiting basically from those bonds. So it is structured basically to take wealth away from the people. And what we can do with Bitcoin bonds, something that I've been lobbying Samson for, actually, why he came to Suriname, is to implement Bitcoin bonds, you know, where you basically create this structure that gets us out of this mess that they have created, even though it's not, you know, on a global scale, it's not a large bond, but still it's being used as one of the things that government actually uses to keep the people, you know, they say we have this massive amount of debt.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas it's not that massive. With the amount that they steal, they could actually just pay off those debts. And there are, you know, many investors that have come, many structures that they can implement. We have an abundance of resources, abundance of you know, potential in our country. And if they just tap that, then they could actually, you know, get rid of most of our debt, similar to you know, what's being done here in El Salvador. So we can use many of the same instruments. We have energy potential in Suriname as well. So there's lots of resources that we can tap to solve a lot of the problems facing our economy. And, you know, bonds being one of them, Bitcoin bonds being one of them. And the way you can structure them, you know, you can structure them in so many ways, in so many durations, especially the longevity of these financial instruments that you can create using Bitcoin being a tool that, you know, it's not something that will lose value within a short time frame. You're not fighting in inflation as what they're, you know, saying that they're doing with traditional financial instruments. So you have opportunity and options to actually create a system that benefits the majority of the population instead of one that just benefits a handful of people in the population.
Are you looking for the best way to store your seed phrase? Well, I've got it for you. It's Stampseed. They've got the number one punch place where you can order a full-on package where they've got every single thing. They've got all the letters. You could just get it in there. And they've got this sick, sick hammer, which they've engineered to make it so easy for you to punch in that titanium steel plate and store your seed phrase in the most secure way possible. So go ahead and get your Bitcoin off of these exchanges and use promo code GREENCANDLE for 15% off. They're helping power their show. They've got the Bitcoin logo. You can punch it into your seed phrase as well if you could see it here. They've got a lot of cool stuff. And now I'm helping empower you to get your Bitcoin off an exchange utilizing Stampseed and storing your seed phrase in the most secure way possible. Now get to it. All right. Back to the show. Yeah, so you mentioned Samson. Samson's great, right? Jan 3, so shout out to Samson. But he always talks about the Omega candle. We're having, you know, a good price run up now, right? Yeah. We've cracked 90K, potentially getting to that 100K mark before the end of the year. How important do you think that the price action, just like having more eyeballs on Bitcoin and everything along those lines, helps with not only, you know, your presidential campaign and everything like that, but also more of the acceptance? Or do you think it's more on the success that El Salvador has seen that can kind of help you, I guess, you know, propose some of these Bitcoin-based policies?
Well, you know, as I was a toxic maxi before I ever decided to run in these elections. So one Bitcoin will always be one Bitcoin, one sat will always be one sat. Fiat price does not matter. So, you know, historically, if you look at price movement, when people look at Bitcoin, they still relate it to US dollar. And we saw, if you think of, you think back to like 1,000 and you think back to 10,000, you know, those were mental hurdles, basically, which made them, you know, made it as resistance a little bit harder to break. So I think around 100K, we'll see that, but I think we're just going to push past it. And you know, Bitcoin, it's replacing the existing fiat system. You know, everything that is centralized will eventually be sucked up and repriced into sats. And just like shells were replaced by coins, you won't be thinking about, oh, this used to cost this many dollars. You know, you won't price it. It'll take a mental shift, of course, similar to moving from shells to coins. But you won't be thinking about the previous value of something in another, you know, and basically a currency that doesn't exist anymore. So I do think we have momentum on our side. Ow. I do think we have momentum on our side, and I don't use price. You know, right now it feels really nice because you've in it for 3 years. People have been, you know, like Bitcoin is a scam or this or that. So it feels really nice to see the price pumping, and suddenly for, you know, after being an idiot for 3 years, suddenly you're a genius again. So that it does feel good. To get that validation and to kind of know that people are realizing it because of just their, you know, they're just watching number go up. Ow. But, you know, from just a countrywide perspective, I use the Bukele example a lot. I use the Milei example a lot. I use, you know, government being this institution that has been so corrupt and has stimulated corruption and facilitated corruption in our country, you know, at the scale that it has, and globally, you know. So I used the example of the change that they have been able to implement and the impacts that it has had on the economy locally in El Salvador and in Argentina, that the changes that they're able to do actually, that you have never in the history of any government seen before, right? You've never seen leaders going against the status quo, calling out the Fed, going on stage, speaking out against the war machine and you know, the debasement of currencies. You haven't seen that anywhere in history. So I do use that as an example. I do think we do have momentum on our side. You know, something that was, I think, a lot more difficult for Bukele when he did what he needed to do. So we do have momentum on our side. We do have, you know, the halving was in April this year. We have, you know, supply decreasing. The reward decreasing.
We have you under the hot seat here. So.
You really do.
It's a unique environment for sure.
Yeah, you really do. So you have the reward decreasing. So that has its impacts, you know, on the market itself. So we have a bit more momentum on our side. We have 6 months to go. So it's going to be a very interesting 6 months. It has been an interesting year already, and it keeps getting, you know, more exciting as we go. We keep getting more momentum. You know, I'm here with my program manager from Germany, Stefan, who's leading the charge. He's rounded up a global group of experts, you know, Austrian economists, the best minds in the world, that are also, you know, advising Bukele and also have the same vision, the same dreams, the same, you know, the same structures that they want to see in nation states, how you decentralize government, how you restructure the whole thing, and how you give power back to the people. This you know, and also happen to be Bitcoiners, some of them.
Yeah, so you brought up Bukele and Milei. Mm-hmm. What are you looking at from each of them? How do you see them kind of comparing, contrasting, and yeah?
Well, if I look at Bukele, for example, I think of, you know, what he was able to do in changing the image of the country, but not just the image, actually the actual situation on the ground here. You know, it used to be the murder capital of the world. When you speak to people here, most of them have had murders happen in their close vicinity, or, you know, somewhere near them, or, you know, in a close family or friends. So that is something that impacted them in their daily lives. And I came here, I was lobbying within the Bitcoin community in 2017 and before on Telegram, in a group called Whirlpool, where you're like Charlie Shrem, all the early guys were in there. And I went to Consensus in 2017, I think, or 2016, a couple of years back to back, lobbying for exactly this, you know, lobbying for our country to be, you know, to adopt Bitcoin as the currency and to separate money from state and to create that system that Satoshi developed Bitcoin for. And I came down here when I saw Bukele doing it in 2021, you know, wanting to lobby here. I spoke to Stacey actually in 2021, lobbying for the same thing. We need to do this in Suriname too. And It's you could feel the fear then, right? We came to the conference, Jesus. You could feel at the conference like the actual, you know, not within like the conference itself, but when we went to El Zonte, for example, we as a group got left behind, and we had to find our own transportation back. And we found this merchant, a shop owner, who brought us back in a pickup truck. Uh-huh. And so we were all in the back, and he would yell at us to duck because we had to hide from the gangs. Because if they saw us, you know, our lives would be in danger. So you kind of felt that fear and that tension. And we were in this situation where we were actually feeling it. I was at an event on the beach, and I walked outside with two other Bitcoiners from the States, and they walked outside with me, and someone came and started screaming at us, right? You're not supposed to go outside. You're not supposed to walk around. You're not supposed to walk around on your own, because you could be kidnapped and you're going to be murdered. And then, you know, this sense of fear, it was very apparent. And I came back, you know, you keep coming back after, and you can see the difference, right? Right now, I can just walk around. Nobody shouts at me. Nobody screams at me. Nobody's telling me you're going to be this or you're going to be that. And you talk to the people, and you can sense, you know, that change of and that hope, things that things are actually changing. So that was very inspiring, you know, knowing that he locked up 80,000 people, that he went in front of his parliament, told all of them that they were, you know, if they were corrupt or if they were corrupt in the past, that they would be prosecuted and that there would be repercussions, you know, things that show that he was actually implementing change. Change that was inspiring that we can also implement in Suriname. That gives me hope because in Suriname, we're not the murder capital of the world. We don't have that much violence. You know, it's not, we don't have gangs that do those type of things. It's very isolated incidents. So it is very inspiring to see that you can actually affect that change. And you know, that's one of the main things, seeing how he is going up against IMF, World Bank, against the Fed and the U.S. centralized system. Even though here they're dollarized, we have an opportunity in Suriname to actually replace our national currency with Bitcoin over time as we, you know, analyze how quickly we can actually do that. If it depends on me, I do it immediately. But so they're looking at how we can implement that and how quickly we can. That would be one of the key distinctions between El Salvador and Suriname. We can do legal tender from day one, recognize it as foreign currency, and then it can be accepted as legal tender. But actually making it the unit of account, separating money from state, and then making it actually completely transparent, the government budget. We have this idea of creating a corruption bounty that people can actually look into the system and look for corruption and get a reward for finding corruption. That's something that's unprecedented, right? So that's something mm-hmm. we can implement. And if I look at Argentina and Malay, what he has done in such a short amount of time, like even Stefan keeps sending me like this list of what he was able to do within a short time frame. And we were making the execution plan for Suriname and seeing like, what can we do on day one? What can we do in the first month? What can we do in 3 months? And what's going to take a year? What's going to take longer, right? So we're making this roadmap for implementation. And he's sending me all of these things that Bukele did in a month. And if you look at Suriname and some of the changes that we want to implement and how long I thought it was going to take to implement those changes, what Bukele is doing completely changes the timeline and the perspective that I had. We can actually do a lot within a much shorter time frame than I had even dreamed of, to be honest, because we have a small population. We have a small, just physical footprint. We only live on 7% of the country. So it's not as big as Argentina. The population is not as big as Argentina or El Salvador. We're a tenth of the size in terms of population. We're, our city's very small in terms of square kilometers. So you can do a lot, be very agile and really change things. And so I enrolled Suriname into the MIT REAP program. And during all of this change, you'll actually have, you know, one of the number one innovation institutions, universities in the world, seeing this, documenting this, and then hopefully it finds its way back, or hopefully they'll be required to report these case studies and see that, you know, grow internationally and then be pushed to other innovation hubs that they've created over the last couple of decades and actually see the reverse happening, right? You'll see the damage that has been done by big tech, by centralization, and hopefully see that go into reverse over the next couple of years. And it's not an easy fight. You know, I am fighting against the status quo, and not just the status quo in Suriname. You're fighting against big tech, big centralized power, the big monetary system, basically. So it's not just me fighting against politicians in Suriname. You're fighting a battle against, this deep state, government control, government, it's the people that are pulling the strings behind governments, right? Mm-hmm. That have most of the control in the world. And it's not something that they want to let go very easily. So I do feel that in the country as well. You do feel that people are trying to sabotage or trying to you know, especially on, like, for example, even the program, you see, you can feel that. But we keep fighting, right? We're rebels.
Okay, so you've discovered Bitcoin and are on the path to financial self-sovereignty. But simply holding Bitcoin is not enough. You need to make sure that it's scored properly and you are in 100% control over all your assets. So sharing your keys with third parties and taking on that counterparty risk is not the answer. The answer is pure and simple. It's uncompromising self-custody, and there's no better way to do it than the Bitcoin way. They've got over 25 years of cybersecurity experience, and their team of experts can help you properly self-custody your Bitcoin, secure your digital life, configure your privacy phones, and even establish a Plan B residency if you're looking to do so. So I'm going to help you guys out here and give you a free consultation if you take the first step and visit thebitcoinway.com/greencandle, and you can check out the boys at The Bitcoin Way and see how they can help you become self-sovereign. Yeah. So based on your, you know, kind of calculations, estimations, how quickly do you think you could get to a hyper Bitcoinized Suriname where it's,
what we're estimating now is actually maybe even within the first year.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. That quickly.
Yeah.
So what would that look like? Would that be, you know, bananas, coffee, everything priced in Bitcoin?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Replace, just scratching SRD and replacing it with SAT.
What would be the biggest hurdle for that?
I think the biggest hurdle is education, right? Because as president, you have executive power, something that we also want to change constitution. We want to change the constitution to remove more power away from the top and decentralize government and give more power back to the people. But as president, you do have executive power, so you can affect a lot of change within, you know, within the just the mandate that you have as president. So it's not, and it's not the first time that we've changed currency. We have scrapped 30. We've gone from Surinamese guilder to to Surinamese dollar. It's third currency change already. So it's not just the first one. So people are used to that change, and they're not happy with inflation either. So once you show them the benefits of it, you know, that basically will give people the motivation to support and accept it. And I think, you know, being a citizen, earning in sats instead of in SRDs, seeing your value increase over time versus decreasing as much as it does right now. If you just look at SRD versus the dollar, you can actually see it almost going off of a cliff and then constantly doing that. So you see the loss of value, the loss of wealth. People feel it in their pensions. People feel it in their saving. People feel it, you know, constantly. So if you can actually change that for them immediately and see that change happening, you know, see them, see the prices in the supermarket, you know, needing to be decreased versus needing to be increased, right? Because everything an import company imports will be cheaper over time. So you can actually improve their lives within a very short time frame. And they're already used to volatility, right? In our own currency, it loses in a week's time. It loses a couple of SRD versus the dollar. So they're already used to volatility, but not volatility that goes in the right direction over time. It goes the wrong way. And with open market operations being executed as they have, we're going to see more inflation. And you're going to see more people lose more of their value, more of their wealth, if we don't stop it, if we don't change the system. So us being able to change the system right now and change how people earn money and how they're able to transact internationally, I think that's going to be create this ripple effect to the rest of the world and push, you know, this movement that has been going on for longer than a decade, 15 years now, push it towards other countries replicating it, other countries, because then the people are going to see, they're going to want it. Because you're not just using it as a legal tender. Like in El Salvador, for example, adoption is going very slowly, right? Just imagine just scrapping. It's been done before multiple times, and our central bank really does not function as a central bank. So, and we have a very small agile economy, so you can actually implement changes like this. We have the resources to do it. We have the natural resources to do it. So just imagine, just scrap SRD, change it to SAT.
There we go. I love that. So, all right. So you've talked a little bit about Suriname's economy. For those who don't know, how would you describe it right now? And I might transition over here, and you don't have to look backwards at me. But now that you got your tattoo done, so how did it feel?
It hurt less than I was expecting, but it still pretty much hurt. But I've been wanting to do this since I think I started thinking about it at BTC Prague. I think it was last year, and now we have the supplier formula right next to Kismet.
There we go.
So awesome. Destiny and Bitcoin Destiny.
That's perfect combination.
Exactly. So yeah, it's been a long time coming. It's been longer than a year that I needed to get this. So I seized the opportunity and used my multitasking skill set to do to scram two things in at the same time.
Calling all shadowy super coders. I've got an event specifically for you. That's right. I am working with PlebLab to help out with Top Builder. Top Builder, it's like the Top Chef, but for shadowy supercoders. They've got a Bitcoin prize worth of $15,000 that you can earn when you showing off your skills. But not only that, you will gain valuable exposure, mentorship, and great collaboration opportunities. And a lot of people raised money last year, not just the winner. So you have the potential to show your stuff. All you got to do is sign up now. Between now and December 31st, go through three rounds where you are showing your skills. And then at the end, you will showcase your stuff at Startup Day down in Austin. So go ahead and sign up now and get everything started for Top Builder and showcase your stuff and help build in the Bitcoin ecosystem. All right, enough for me. Back to the show.
Question.
Yeah. So, how would you describe Suriname's economy right now?
Right now, the economy is in a backward trend. It's similar to any country in the world. It's in a recessionary state. You have growth, though they're reporting that the numbers are going back up. You can see it. In business, you can see it in just the standard of living. You can see the prices go up. Recently, our Minister of Finance increased government take on oil, for example, and said that the people don't have to know that we increased the government take. So you have this situation where things are getting worse, like daily life is getting a lot worse for people. Salaries have gone down in fiat value, like in foreign currency value, all the way down to police officers earning $200 a month, right? So it's really hard to survive. And people are very much in survival mode, living day to day. Some of the girls that work at the soup kitchen, they're very happy that they have an opportunity and a job that they love, where they're earning better and where they get to change things. But they previously sometimes didn't have food for 2-3 days at a time. You have entire areas in our country, entire little what we call weka, where people, they live in poverty. They don't have showers. They don't have they don't have a toilet where they live. They don't have basic utilities. You don't have water. You have to walk to get water for 30 minutes and have to wait for 30 minutes for a bucket to fill up. And you have to do that multiple times a day. So people think that because we're on this continent that things are different, but it's very similar to Africa and a lot of parts of Suriname. And the only reason it is like that is because of corrupt government. And, we were the 17th richest country in the world. And now we're one of the poorest on the continent. So it has been systemic corruption, and our economy does not reflect what it should be because of the even the IMF funds, like, where are they actually going to? I was recently speaking to someone in government, you know, because whistleblowers tend to gravitate towards me because they want to, you know, they feel things are going wrong and they want things to be fixed. So they tell me things that are going wrong. And he was explaining to me, like, where is the IMF funding actually going to? Where is it being spent? And you have all of these commissions that are being put into place by the president, like every week almost, a new commission, like hundreds of commissions have been made. And then apparently they get, you know, there's going to be like 800K or a million is going to be wired. You keep this amount. This amount is going to go to another bank account and you keep your trap shut. Right, so that's how they're dividing up and divvying up a lot of this money that is coming in. And if you look at our current president, even, you know, people say he's more corrupt than our previous president, and that's saying a lot because our previous president was a dictator, right? So this one is more corrupt.
Oh man!
And you look at some of the companies that are coming in, some of the solutions, some of the investors that want to come into the country, and all of this development is being hampered because they keep asking, "What's in it for me? What percentage am I getting? What kind of kickback am I getting?" And other projects, like, and they start these projects. APSK was a major countrywide scandal about a hydrogen plant. And if you just, like, I got the documentation because people tend to send these to me to review, to advise whether or not they should attach their name to it. And I did my due diligence on it. And Jesus Christ, it was like, if you just Google these people and you take a look at the structures, you could immediately see that this was, you know, just fraud, like massive fraud. And you've had multiple scandals like this, like just back to back to back to back to back to back. So it's this created economy, this created situation where it is like this because it's so small, right? It's 3.8 billion GDP. It's a very small economy. So if you do the right things with the natural resources that we have and you attract foreign capital, foreign direct investment, you create an environment for the private sector to thrive and the free market to thrive, then there's no reason why we should be in this situation. So it's sad to see, and that's why we're fighting against it, so mm-hmm. we can change it.
How closely do you think Suriname could be to a situation of hyperinflation? Because you said, you know, the SRE is dropping on the dollar by the week. Is it close, or, you know, obviously switching over to Bitcoin would help, but
it really depends on, you know, who wins the elections next year, right? Because the person that wins will be able to implement change. And I would, you know, take the Bitcoin route and implement change and fight inflation. But if you get leadership, again, that doesn't know what they're doing or how to actually tackle inflation or how to actually fight it, unfortunately, our banking sector are, you know, they barely know how inflation actually works, and they're not even following what's happening in the U.S. or how much is being printed by the Fed, for example, and what's going to happen with the U.S. dollar. So they're not very much aware of how the monetary system itself actually even works. So they don't know how to fix these problems. And you get the same thing as you know, in Turkey and in Venezuela, or in Argentina, where you have this, you know, leadership that barely understands how money works, barely understands how central banking actually works, how our economy actually works, trying to implement change, like very ad hoc, you know, doing what they think they should be doing or getting advice from the IMF, but then doing it in a way where it's even worse. Mm-hmm. Like they implement IMF policies and they do a shit job at it. So it'll exacerbate things. So I say this in multiple speeches, you pick, right, as a people. You get the leader you deserve as a people. and you either pick, are we becoming Venezuela, or are we heading towards, you know, what El Salvador is doing, what Argentina is doing, what's going to be happening in the U.S., what's happening in Switzerland? Are we going to head in that direction, or we're heading towards Venezuela, basically?
Are you looking for a way to earn some free sats? Who isn't? Well, I've got the perfect way for you. It's an app called Yopaki. Besides having the absolute coolest name in the game, they've got an interactive card game called Loteria. Oh, look at that accent. I'm just hitting it, huh? That can teach you the history of Bitcoin and financial literacy. They've got amazing services and one of the slickest mobile wallets. Download it now using this link and you can get 500 sats on the house on Green Candle, and then you can play Loteria every single day in order to potentially get some sats. All you got to do is match the cards, and it's an extremely fun and interactive way to learn more about Bitcoin. All right, enough for me. Let's get back to the show.
Yeah, so we've got a few minutes left. We'll go for some more fun questions so people get to really know who Maya is. So, first we'll do one on Suriname. So you know how in Wolf of Wall Street, he says, sell me this pen. So if you're going to do it really quickly, how would you sell somebody to either visit Suriname or to, you know, keep a close eye on what you're doing here outside of Bitcoin? What are some of the fun things to do and, yeah, tourist attractions that you guys
got in Suriname? Well, we just had our conference in Suriname, actually, this past week. And, you know, the international guests that came down, we had this Amazon adventure during the day with them. And they honestly said that it was the best conference that they've ever, like, this is the standard to beat now, right? Because now you're in the Amazon, you're on a boat, you're seeing nature, you're talking one-on-one with Bitcoiners on a beach, we brought them to a private beach in the middle of the Suriname River. And then they went boating and we were at this resort and you had the sunset coming down, and it was just about interacting. And then what brings you down is one of them came up to me, and actually maybe two of them came up to me after and said, when you're on the water and you're in the Amazon and you're in the rainforest and you're just it has something different, you know, that I've never felt anywhere else in the world. And it's this sense of freedom. So if you love freedom, you know, you don't have to wait for the elections. I mean, fuck government anyway, right? Right? Yeah. We're Bitcoiners. Yeah. So who gives a fuck? Bitcoin doesn't. So visit and go into the jungle. Go into the interior. Go visit these indigenous tribes, these maroon tribes that have been there for hundreds of years untouched and basically live their lives as they did back then. And go into nature. Get a sense of what life is like without being in the machine, right? Without being in Pink Floyd's another brick in the wall. And get a sense of actual freedom without thinking about the system, without thinking about government, without asking me, like, how are these elections going to go? It doesn't fucking matter. You have actual freedom. And all you need to do is go into the jungle and nobody will find you, right? I had to actually physically tell them, do not go into the jungle more than 3.5 meters because we might not find you back, right? Or you might not find your way back. So don't go walking around, you know, without an actual guide to tell you where to go, because it's actually dangerous. So you can actually go in and explore Suriname and explore, you know, we're not a tourist hub or anything, so you don't have that over tourism. You can actually just go into the jungle. Fuck, you can put a hut up, so, you know, anywhere. You can build a citadel if you want, and nobody will bother you because government does not bother the indigenous tribes, right? They're self-sovereign. They have their own way of living, and they're pretty remote and isolated. So you can actually go and, you know, put up your Starlink, do whatever you want, and have your own source of energy and be independent and be free and be out of the reach of especially what you have in Europe or what's happening in Europe, right? In Europe, in the US, in other nations where you have this government, or in Asia, government overreach, you know, the sense of control, where you're not really living a free life. Life is being forced upon you. You get that freedom. So.
Okay, awesome. Well, then, before you found Bitcoin and before you became the toxic maxi running for president, all of these great things, who was Maya?
I was always the odd kid out. I'd be bullied at school. I'd fight with bullies. I'd hide in the library, in my books. A big Harry Potter fan. I kind of feel like Harry Potter at times, you know, with the tragic life story. and just not being understood by anyone else around you, right? And having this scar, like this legacy. My dad was the most renowned entrepreneur in the country. We're the wealthiest family in the country. So it does feel like my entire life I have been living with this scar, right? Because everybody knows it was in the news in the Netherlands. It was in the news in Suriname. Like, we had journalists and cameras at his cremation. So I did grow up with, I feel like, an invisible scar, basically. Everybody knowing this story, everybody having their own opinion on it. And I never felt like I fit in. I was always, you know, this, like, I was reading Jules Verne when I was six. For my birthday, my mom bought me Encyclopedia. I wanted, you know, the whole range. I would always be behind my computer. I would be with the boys playing games, behind my computer playing games, and we do LAN parties and things like that. And, you know, I grew up as this, I feel, nerdy kid. And even amongst my peers, I didn't feel understood until, and my mom would always, you know, she'd tell me, like, Suriname is too small for you. I told her when I was six, I wanted to go to an Ivy League school. So when I finally went to Oxford in 2019, was accepted into their fintech lab and developing this capital market, having Bitcoin be a part of it, and how to figure out how to build this new system, right? That was what I pitched there, and that's how I got in, including my life story. And I actually felt, because, you know, much of the movie was also filmed there.
Oh, okay.
So it actually feels like Hogwarts for me. And I actually felt understood. You know, my professors kind of like took me out of the pile. And I remembered a chief compliance officer of Apple was giving a presentation, and she'd actually worked with Steve Jobs. And she was giving a presentation, and during one of her slides, and this is 2018 or 19, I think, one of her slides says, Bitcoin was dead. Bitcoin is dead, right? And you're giving this to executives from all over the world, from the brightest minds coming for financial technology to implement it into their companies. And you're telling them Bitcoin is dead. So the moment she said that, I raised my hand up like this little kid, you know, wanting to object. And after giving a lot of people the room to speak, I finally got my turn. And in, I think, 2 minutes, I explained to her how mining works, how SHA-256, how hashing works, how proof of work works versus proof of stake, and how it will never be replaced, and how centralized versus decentralized systems work, right? And she pulled a fucking Steve Jobs on me. Like, after that 2 minutes, and other students said it was the best explanation of Bitcoin that they had ever heard. And after those 2 minutes, she goes, oh no, I didn't say Bitcoin was dead. Bitcoin is the future. You should all be looking at Bitcoin. Everybody should be studying in this room, studying Bitcoin. And I was like, you could see it on my face. I was like, what the fuck just happened? Right? Am I crazy? Didn't she just say Bitcoin? Like, everybody in the class could tell that I was kind of like confused about what had just happened. So they came up to me, like, this entire group came up to me afterward, like, that was amazing. I wish I had filmed it. And, you know, like, she actually did say that. She did say that Bitcoin was dead, and it was on the slide. And then afterwards, the professors, like, kind of took me out of the pile, and you know, they talked to me afterward. They put me on an interview, flew me to New York and put me on an interview afterwards. And they kept keeping tabs also, like, over the years, like, keeping tabs, keeping working, keeping in touch, and kind of following how I progress, and, you know, how this is actually, like, going. A lot of this is also keeping that sanity because you feel insane. And for example, in Suriname, I feel insane. Like I come to Bitcoin conferences to feel more sane. And I go to Oxford or to MIT to feel more sane, because then I actually talk to people that understand like some of the things that are going on in my head. So that's, yeah, that kind of sums up pretty much how I feel and how I feel like I'm perceived as a person. A bit of a geek, a bit of an outcast, a little bit of the Harry Potter, some like hated by a lot of the, you know, the elite, the mainstream. And still, even though everybody hates you and it's going against you, you know, in book part one of book six, going against, you know, that mold, eventually still having the support of that little group of friends and then fighting against evil and then hopefully winning.
All right. So you described Harry Potter. So I'm going to give you some rapid fire people, and I want you to say what character they are in Harry Potter verse in the Bitcoin world to wrap it up. So we'll give you like five or six or so. First one I'll start off is Satoshi.
Would I say, well, Nicholas Flamel or Dumbledore?
Okay.
Well, Dumbledore is actually like more of a mentor in the space. So that's a tough one.
That's a tough one. Okay. Yeah. Michael Saylor.
Saylor. Saylor would be Snape, I think.
Oh, okay. Interesting. Interesting.
Yeah. Not from the, because, you know, he's a bit of both.
Yeah.
Right. So, but heart probably in the right place.
Okay.
So, but still smart, playing a key role, I think, in either he's Trojan horsing it into mainstream finance, or it's difficult. Just like Snape, you don't know exactly where it's. So it's
okay. Peter Schiff.
Oh Jesus. God, what's her name again? The journalist.
Oh.
Rita Skeeter.
Okay.
Yeah, that would be Peter Schiff, like completely fucking wrong and an idiot.
All right, Nayib Bukele.
Bukele, well, yeah, you don't want him to die. No, not that one. Because I kind of see him like I forget what his name was. He's the one of the champions in book four, also from Gryffindor with Harry. But he dies at the end. I'm sorry if I'm ruining it for some
okay.
people, but
yeah.
But you know, he has this like aura of just being the head of the football, you know, like the jock, the jersey on, basically. So his suave, his style, and also being like being like a, you know, key player, like a team leader, kind of leading the charge a little bit. So
okay,
yeah, replacing, but I forget his name. He died at the end of the champions match, and his dad, you know, Harry brought his body back, and then his dad went crying over it. I forget his name, to be honest.
Okay. Well, we'll wrap it up with yourself, and then you can tell everybody how they can help support your campaign.
Oh, well, I identify as Harry. But okay, I don't know if most people identify as Harry, or just because I have this, like, feel like I have this similar curse, you know, and I've been living with for my entire life, and the same feeling of alienation at a lot of points in my life. And wrap up with, I'm sorry, I get lost in.
No worries. Yeah, I'm getting you some funny questions here with Harry Potter. But how can everybody that's watching support you?
If they want to support, well, you know, at the end of book seven, part two, they all rally at Hogwarts and they all start fighting against evil, right? I think this is a battle of good versus evil. And I do think that, you know, you do have a lot of key players that identify as a lot of the characters. And I do think that right now is our battle for Hogwarts. Right now is our battle for good, right? And I do think we all need to come together and fight. And I think a lot of people are forgetting, like, there are a lot of egos in the space, a lot of infighting, a lot of people making the same fucking wall and doing the same fucking shit. And forgetting that we're actually fighting the system and that we should actively be fighting the system. You know, we're fighting a big fucking behemoth. So we need to align, we need to organize, we need to start actively battling. And it's going to be, you know, this is the part where this is the suddenly part, right? This is where we actually have it roll out of fucking proportion and we actually fight this revolution. So this is the part where we all need to get together and really rally. So reach out wherever.
There we go. Awesome stuff. And I'll put all of the ways to contact you and help support the campaign in the show notes as well. And shout out to Bitcoin Beach for letting us use the studio. And Maya, awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in to the latest episode of the State of Bitcoin podcast. If you really enjoyed this one, I've got another one cooking up for you. You can click that right here and you can go to the next episode, which is an absolute banger, where you know I'm bringing you only the latest and greatest guests. Or if you're looking for more macro-related content, you could check out my other channel, Macro Insights Pod. I got it linked for you right here. So where I'm bringing you more about stocks, real estate, traditional finance stuff. So go ahead and check that out. And if you enjoyed this podcast, go ahead and hit that like, hit that subscribe button, and tell a friend to tell a friend. All right, enough from me. I'll see you at the next one.